You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people, the places, and the pupils of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
Dorothy, ready for Miss P?
Not me, P.
Yeah.
Not me, P.
Yeah.
Not me, P. Not P.
We're at a home in Van Nuys. It's another school day for a kindergartner named Jordy.
Not me, P.
Now it's time for speech therapy with Ms. P.
Okay, my friend, do you want to do it on the carpet or table?
No.
Jordy has moderate autism spectrum disorder. He's minimally verbal, but when it comes to virtual learning, he knows how to say no.
Jordy, we have to do Miss P. Miss
Okay?
No, me P. No, me P.
Governor Gavin Newsom is pushing to get young kids like Jordy back in school this month. But LAUSD, Jordy's school district, says it is not safe until teachers get vaccinated. At the current rate, that's not going to happen this school year, leaving some parents deeply frustrated. More on the story now on KCRW's Kaylee Wells.
When Jordy's mom, Carla Suarez Capdet, pictured him starting school, she didn't imagine him on a laptop at home.
Like most parents, you have this kind of idealized version of what your son's first day of kindergarten will look like with an oversized backpack and lunch pail, and none of that happened.
Neither did the individualized education program that LAUSD granted him, a special day class, time with neurotypical kids every day. Instead, it's just squares on a screen.
Really, the majority of his day is really just like an hour or so of Zoom, and then the rest of the time is supposed to be asynchronous, which is kind of independent work. So you can imagine how independent work must look like for a child that's 6 years old, minimally verbal, and has moderate to severe autism.
Capdet knows what Jordy's missing out on. For just 5 days in the fall, he went to school on campus. That was when schools were open, just for some kids with special needs.
When he met his teacher, he was just over the moon. He was, you know, bouncing all over the classroom. He was shouting out letters. And he was so excited when we got back home, you know, the only thing he could say was drive Mr. M. The teacher's last name is Mr. M for short. And he just said that nonstop until the next day and then the next day. And so it was just amazing to see him light up and actually be excited about learning. He needed that in-person connection. You know, via Zoom, it's just so hard for him to understand what he's doing. And then he gets in a classroom and he's like, oh, this makes sense.
Then there was a surge in cases, and LAUSD Superintendent Austin Buettner shut down campuses again.
So when we saw him on that fifth day, you know, I knew we weren't going back to campus, but Jordy didn't. And so later that week, he was just devastated, sobbing, and he grabbed his iPad and he went into Google Maps and he literally drove himself to school. Didn't put in an address because he doesn't know where his school is, but he knows the route and he had memorized it in those 5 days. And he literally drove himself to it and zoomed down to his classroom and said, Mr. M, and pointed at it. And my heart just broke.
Capdet believes kids like her son need to be back in the classroom. Now case rates are too high for that. But even when they were lower, the LA Teachers Union, UTLA, strongly opposed reopening. And Capdet feels abandoned by them. She says 2 years ago during the teacher strike, she supported them.
Wearing my red shirt, I was, you know, honking on corners. I was holding up signs and I fervently believed in their efforts at the time. And I feel now that we need them more than ever, or special needs kids do. They're not there for us. I haven't heard a peep from UTLA as a parent during all of COVID.
And now she says the teachers union keeps moving the goalposts. First, they demanded PPE and safety protocols, then HVAC updates, then COVID testing and contact tracing. And now the demand is vaccinations for all school staff and lower case rates.
But every time UTLA met the demands, it just seemed like there was another thing added to it. And that's really discouraging and it's confusing.
UTLA Secretary and Bargaining Co-Chair Arlene Inouye says it's not safe for teachers. And it's not their fault the cases keep surging. State and county officials have reopened up lots of public spaces that have kept COVID-19 rates high.
So don't put it on educators to just open up our doors when you have made really poor decisions that have made it worse.
Plus, the state has been inconsistent about what safe levels of COVID-19 transmission even means. Newsom announced last month that counties need to demonstrate a case rate of 25 per 100,000 residents before they can reopen elementary schools. A metric, by the way, that no Southern California county is even close to hitting right now. But before the most recent surge, the requirement was 7 cases per 100,000, or less than a third of the new allowable spread rate.
So why is that changing now? So there's a lot of concern about why there's this push to reopen schools when the conditions are actually worse now than even before, when the county said it was too dangerous to reopen schools.
And this time, Superintendent Buettner agrees.
It's hard to be confident we're somehow safer today than we were back in December when health authorities told us similar virus levels put us in dire straits. If schools are truly a priority, why are malls and card rooms being allowed to reopen when the Los Angeles area is nowhere close to meeting the state standards for schools to reopen?
LAUSD parent Tunette Powell also doesn't like seeing businesses reopen while schools stay closed. She says education is just as essential. She lives in Hyde Park and has a kindergartner, a fourth grader, and a sixth grader learning remotely. Meanwhile, she works in person at a private elementary school.
We're not thinking about how we do this and do this well. And so look at the things that are opened up. We didn't ask, you know, and it's like, we don't care about teachers. Do we care about grocery store workers, right? Who haven't been able to go home? You know what I mean? Like, do we care about, you know, healthcare workers? Like on and on and on. Education is extremely important.
Some public schools in LA County, not in LAUSD, have been open during the pandemic. Las Virgenes Unified, which serves affluent cities like Calabasas and Agoura Hills, was the first in the county to bring back kids up through second grade in early November. But LA Unified predominantly serves students of color, and more than 80% of them live below the poverty line, two groups disproportionately affected by COVID-19. The district recently reported last month that 1 in 3 students from several low-income neighborhoods who were tested at district-run sites were positive for COVID-19. Bridget Andrade teaches first grade at Avalon Gardens Elementary in Willowbrook in South LA. Her personal experience with COVID-19 changed her attitude from open the schools to it's not safe. Her husband is a teacher, and she's got 3 kids in elementary, middle, and high school. Right now, her whole family is infected with COVID, and that changed her mind.
I've said no matter what, they're going to go to school when school's open. But now I don't know that I feel that way because I realize the risk. My kids going to school, they have 3 schools they're going to. They're being exposed to all the kids that are in their class, their teachers, and then they're bringing that back home to my husband and I. And we're exposing whoever we come in contact with. And if I go to my school and my husband goes to his school and he's exposed to his students and I'm exposed to my students, and then we all come home to the same house, we're sharing 5 schools worth of exposure.
Her father's in the hospital. Her mother-in-law just came home from the hospital, and all 3 of her kids experienced pretty severe symptoms. And she says protocols like temperature checks aren't good enough. None of her kids ran a fever.
It just made the reality of how contagious it is, it just made it more real to me because all of us got it. No one was spared. And I just keep thinking, okay, I teach. I know how kids are. Kids do not maintain social distance.
Andrade has all the frustrations of other parents. Her 3 kids have ADHD and have accommodations too. She says they've all suffered academically more than the average child, trying to focus on Zoom all day long. One of her sons was hospitalized with mental health issues stemming from the stresses of COVID-19. And even with that, she doesn't want them back in the classrooms yet.
In the grand scheme of things, everyone's kind of going to be in the same boat. They'll make up for it when they're back on campus. But I don't want to rush. I would hate to know that my child has irreversible lung damage because they got COVID because they went back to school. I would hate to know that a teacher at my school dies because they went back to school and got infected by a student.
Andrade doesn't expect to be back to school this year. Until it's safer, she plans to keep teaching her kids from the cubicle she bought and set up in her garage, adorned with the same bulletin boards that line her empty classroom. For KCRW, I'm Kaylee Wells.
While the debate about whether or not to reopen schools continues, one thing is certain. There will likely be a number of students who come to school with COVID until communities are more fully vaccinated. So some researchers are trying to measure that risk. Dylan Chan is one of them. He is a pediatric ear, nose, and throat doctor practicing at UC San Francisco Benioff Children's Hospital. He and his team have created an interactive calculator to estimate for any county in the United States the likelihood that a group of asymptomatic children will contain at least one child with COVID-19. That obviously can be valuable information as teachers and school officials decide how to set up classrooms and how many kids to allow inside one space at once. Dr. Chan is with us right now to talk about it. Hey there.
Hey.
Describe the risk calculator for us, if you wouldn't mind. I mean, you go in and you choose the state and county where you live, and then what other variables do you select?
Sure, yeah. So you can choose your state and county. Obviously, most people are interested in what's happening right now. So the calculator is defaulted to choose right now. And then you can select a group size. And what the calculator does, it uses the publicly available data on COVID rates in the general population. So we wanted to use that data, which is readily available, to help provide an estimate for asymptomatic pediatric infection rates, which is not readily available.
All right. So what are the numbers then? Let's try this calculator on LA County. If we want to calculate the risk over the last week that a group of 26 asymptomatic kids would have had one COVID positive child in it. I mean, that's the average class size, right, at LAUSD.
So taking the data from the past week and a group size of 26, there's about a 67% chance that at least one of those kids among those 26 would have an asymptomatic infection.
This is a lot of math that you have to do to get to these numbers. One thing I do know, doctor, is 67% is a high number.
It is. And the thing, though, to remember about this is that, you know, this is providing the chance that one of these kids, if you tested them for COVID, would be positive for the virus. Now, what we really don't know, what we have some clues about, but what we don't know for sure is what the chances that kid would actually transmit that virus to another kid in the class or to an adult in the class, or, you know, that kid would potentially serve as the nidus of an outbreak, you know, because that class, you know, was there. And what we mostly know is that kids actually are very inefficient at transmitting COVID infections to other people, and that, you know, kids in these classroom situations are not actually that likely to be major drivers of these big outbreaks.
So when we're having this conversation about students going back to the classroom, it is true from a medical point of view and a scientific standpoint that children and students, they're not as good at spreading the disease, the virus, as adults.
That's what we've very consistently found. Contrary to what we normally think of, you know, with kids spreading lots of viruses, there are a number of reasons why kids are inefficient transmitters of COVID. You know, they seem to get the disease less easily because of their biology, and they seem to be less likely to transmit it to other people.
How do you hope educators and school officials will use your calculator when wrestling with this question of whether or not to reopen?
Yeah, you know, I think there are two main takeaways. You know, one is certainly that the risk of asymptomatic infections in kids very clearly tracks with the rate of COVID in the community. So that's why the risk that kids pose is so closely tied to the ability of everyone in the community to band together to, you know, tamp down the infection overall. The second piece of this is that it is never going to be possible to completely eliminate risk. But focusing our efforts, our support, resources into constructing safe environments, using, you know, tried and true things like masks and social distancing and reduced class size, if we can, you know, to minimize that risk rather than trying to eliminate the risk. 67% sounds high. 20% also sounds pretty high. And honestly, the difference between those is maybe not that meaningful.
Yeah, but if the forecast has 60 or 70% chance of rain, I'm going to take an umbrella. If it's a 20% chance of rain, I may not take an umbrella. But I mean, what do you tell teachers and administrators that you shouldn't have a class size of 26 kids because that's the highest number? Maybe you should reduce that to 10 or 15 or 12.
Yeah, so that, you know, clearly, you know, having the class size cuts the risk in half. I think, you know, going to your analogy about the risk of rain and the umbrella, I would buy the umbrella either way, right? Knowing that in the next couple months, there might be times that the chance of rain is high, sometimes the chance of rain is low. But having that umbrella around with me all the time protects me from any chance of rain, then I'm much better able to tolerate those fluctuations and withstand the 60% as well as the 10%.
I can assure you, doctor, I have many umbrellas, even in Southern California.
Even in Southern California.
They're good to have. As,
yeah.
Even in Southern California, and even the masks, the number of masks that I have, same thing, and all good to have. Dr. Dylan Chan, a pediatrician over at UC San Francisco Benioff Children's Hospital. Doctor, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
And by the way, a link to that calculator is at our website, kcrw.com/greaterLA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
This is Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiatakis. With California and even LA County somewhat reopened now, there are plenty of folks, you perhaps, who want to know just how safe it is to actually get out of the house. Hair salons, nail salons, outdoor dining, even grocery shopping, there is no doubt there's a risk that you could get or you could transmit COVID-19. And some doctors waging the fight against coronavirus from the start of the pandemic continue to sound the alarm. Dr. Samuel Fink is one of them. He was one of the first doctors in the county to treat COVID patients nearly a year ago. Can you believe it? He's an internal medicine doctor in Tarzana, and he's with us right now. Hey, Dr. Fink.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here today. And yeah, I agree. It's hard to believe that it's been a year since we all started talking about coronavirus and COVID. What a year it's been. It's hard to believe we've gotten here.
Yeah, you were one of the first to start treating COVID patients. Governor Newsom last week lifted regional stay-at-home orders. COVID numbers seem to be trending downward, thank goodness. What do you think about that decision to open, or at least reopen some things up modestly?
Well, that's entirely true. And it's true that COVID numbers are down compared to about a month ago, where we were seeing about 8,000 cases a day in Los Angeles. We're now at about 4,000. We have to think about that. This is where we were the first and second week of December when everything was shut down. So in my opinion, that decision was really probably based more on politics and business rather than on true healthcare needs. So we certainly understand that businesses want to reopen. They probably have to reopen to stay afloat. But from an individual perspective of us as individuals, we've got to be very careful. When restaurants were open outdoors, I saw a lot of restaurants where the places were simply packed, or it was a make-believe outdoors where they simply constructed a tent and called it outdoors. So if you're going to decide to go to a restaurant, make sure that they're adhering to social distancing, I would say at least 10 feet, and make sure it isn't very crowded. You've got to always be situationally aware and ensure that you're staying safe. If you're in a crowded place, if you're in a tent, that isn't safe. So you've got to assess your level of risk. Just because something opens up does not make it safe. I know that there's a belief that it is, but you've got to really consider your own needs and consider that there are other factors here other than healthcare.
Are you seeing, like, if more people get vaccinated, doctor, we're gonna see these numbers continue to drop, right? I mean, and I wonder, are those folks at a lower risk of getting the virus, even if it's a first dose and not the second dose, even if it's, you know, and we don't know for sure whether they can even transmit the virus, right?
Well, and those are all really great questions. Where are we today? Right now, about 7.5% of Americans have received at least one vaccine. And I think that that number is really too low to have any impact right now. As we vaccinate more Americans, of course, that number will be impactful. What don't we know? We know that these vaccines are very effective after the two doses of keeping you safe from getting significantly ill or being hospitalized or, God forbid, dying from COVID. But we don't know is whether or not you can still get the virus, have it replicate in your nose and spread it to others. Now, there have been reports that the vaccines don't stop that. We actually don't know the answer to that question. So I think right now, while we're all getting vaccinated, until we see the actual number of cases go way down, it probably isn't really safe to be in large groups like that. So I think we need more information, we need more time, and we need to get out more vaccines.
Are you vaccinated?
Yes.
And you're still reluctant to go anywhere?
I've been vaccinated twice with the Pfizer vaccine, and I've checked my antibodies, and you know, they're certainly fine. But because I don't know that I can't get this and then transmit it, I've been very careful. In my office, I still wear an N95, and I still wear a shield. The other thing, as a physician who's been out there as far as COVID, I think I have to model good practices.
What do you tell your patients or friends who are just tired of staying home? Look, we have to be responsible. I get it. But sometimes you're just like, gosh, I just want to go somewhere. I just want to go, even if it's a park. I mean, what do you tell somebody who's just exhausted by this?
Yeah, I'm exhausted too. My family's exhausted. I think we're all exhausted. I mean, this has been a year. And, you know, I've gotten out, I'll go to the beach on Sundays and, you know, I stay away from others and I go with my wife and we walk the dog. So there are plenty of ways to get out. But we have to keep on fighting because right now, even though it's been a year, we still have a responsibility to keep ourselves and those around us safe. And one of the best ways we can do that is by continuing to mask, use shields indoors, and to socially distance. But yeah, I agree. It has been a grind and I'm as tired of it as you are.
What about the Super Bowl coming up on Sunday or Valentine's Day coming up in a couple of weeks? I mean, these are gathering points, right?
I mean, Super Bowl is always a risk because people tend to get together in large groups. I'm going to watch it at home alone with my son because I think that it's really a bad idea to gather indoors. And Valentine's Day can happen as well, although that tends to happen more outdoors. And hopefully people go, they'll stay outside, they'll socially distance. If you're going to go to a Super Bowl party, try to keep it outdoors. Hopefully the weather is supposed to be very nice on Sunday. Socially distance and stay away from other people. That's really the only way you're going to be able to do it safely. But the best thing right now, until we get more people vaccinated, is to limit gatherings of any sort. That's how you're going to keep yourself safe, your family safe, and others safe.
Well, speaking of the vaccination process here in Southern California, the federal government says it's stepping in to help the rollout by opening up a couple of new sites in California. One of them will be here in Los Angeles. How do you think the vaccine rollout in the county has been going thus far?
You know, I'm not as critical of it as other people are. I mean, look, we've developed a vaccine for a new virus in less than a year. And from people I know that have gone to some of these sites to be vaccinated, they have nothing but praise for the process. They're getting you in, they're getting you out. They're scheduling your second dose. So I think it's gone really well. What we need to do is get more vaccines and more arms. That has been the one weakness, is that there's a lot of doses sitting there that haven't been given yet. You know, it's so restrictive and it's hard to schedule an appointment. I think that has been limiting. But so far, I've got to give them at least a B+, A-. This is better than I thought it would go.
Do you think FEMA getting involved will help?
I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. I mean, let's hope that it does help.
That's the old Ronald Reagan axiom, right?
Oh, exactly. But really, the more sites we can get, the more workers, the more vaccines go in arms. And that's exactly what we need. So I'm not overly critical right now, but they have to step it up and they've got to get out more vaccines.
Dr. Samuel Fink, an internal medicine doctor in Tarzana. Dr. Fink, thanks for your time. Good luck to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's it for today. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. Our Wasted series continues. The gang intervention group that recycles old electronics for money and jobs. A trip to Homeboy Industries tomorrow on this program. We'll also chat with Senator Alex Padilla, the newly minted senator from California. He'll join us to talk about what's going on in Washington. Look us up online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Grab the podcast, take the show on the go. Tell us how you're doing as well. If you have a question, kcrw.com/askgreaterLA. Jenna Cagle, Catherine Barnes, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all had hands on this evening's show. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for the ear. Please stay safe and have a good night.